We are holding on Yud Aleph Amud Beis, a little bit above the middle of the Amud, the line between Tla and. We left off that Rav and Shmuel argue when you have a sukkah, if you put schach on your sukkah in such a way that when you put it on, it was possible. So the example we had in the Mishnah was that you took, for example, a grapevine or ivy or what have you and draped it over the sukkah. So we said if you cut it off, then it's kosher. Now the question is cutting it off enough, or do you also have to move it? Do you have to pick up each piece and put it down as schach? So we had Rav and Shmuel arguing about that. Essentially, we said when this comes to the sukkah, you have a concept called tasev lomina asui. Good morning, Ellie. When it comes to the sukkah, you have a concept tasev, you have to make the sukkah, implying volumina asui, not from something that was already made. So the question is the cutting off of the schach, of the ivy or whatever, is that enough to be considered an asiya, or do you need something more than that? So that was essentially the machlokes Rav and Shmuel. And then we had a similar machlokes between them as far as tzitzis. If you put on tzitzis on a beged, if you put tzitzis on a beged, and at the time you put them on, they weren't kosher. For example, you didn't have the ends of the strings weren't separated, so you had it with one long string, and therefore you end at the end, after you tied everything, you have a couple of large loops rather than 8 free-hanging strings. Then again, so Rav would say that cutting the ends of the strings apart is enough, and Shmuel would say that you need to actually undo, you need to untie and retie the tzitzis. Okay. So the Gemara says, middle of Yud Aleph Amud Beis, line against Tlan. Lema Katanoi, should we say that this question about the Asiya, whether just cutting is enough to take away the problem of Tasev Lomina Asui, or whether you need something more than that, should we say that this is actually subject to a Machlokes Tanoim? In other words, that Rav and Shmuel would be having the same argument as Tanoim has. Which, one reason why the Gemara would point that out is, first of all, then if we know who the Halacha is like in Machlokes Tanoim, then we'll know who the Halacha is like in Machlokes Amoraim. But also, there's the point, if it really is the same Machlokes, then why are the Amoraim bothering to repeat the same Machlokes if we already know it's a Machlokes Tanoim? So, now you have like this. In Peret Gimel of our Masechta, we're going to talk about the Dalad Minim. One of the Dalad Minim, the Hadassim, sometimes the Hadass bush grows berries. And those berries can be, once they become ripe, they're black or red or something, and then they look very different than the Hadass, which is green, and therefore if you have a lot of berries on it, then it's possible because it doesn't look harder, doesn't look beautiful. So now what you can do is very simple. You take off the berries. But what happens if you're not allowed to take them off on Yom Tov, the Mishnah says over there. So the Braisa discusses, of a lichton, what if you were over on that and you took off the berries on Yom Tov? Possible. So then the hadas is still going to be possible. Divid of Shimon by Yehud Sadek, Bacham Machshirin, whereas the Chachamim say it's kosher. Now, both of them agree, of course, that you can't fix it on Yom Tov. The problem of taking off the berries is that you're doing a misakin mana. You're making that something was possible and now it's kosher. So why would Rav Shimon ben Yitzchak, Rav Shimon ben Yitzchak, we understand, why would the Chachamim say it's kosher? So, Svarua. So we think when we're bringing in this question in the Mismedrish, we start with the following assumptions. Yikula alma lulav tzarich eged. We're going to assume that both of these tanoim hold that the lulav has to be bound. In other words, it's not just enough to have the lulav and the hadassim and the arava separate. You have to have them all three bound together, and you have to pick them up all at once. So therefore, that would be the asiya that comes, just like with the sukkah. Then you have chaga sukkah's tasalacha. You have a prerequisite, make the sukkah, and then afterwards you're going to sit in it. If we say lulav tzarech eged, then it comes out that the lulav also has a prerequisite to it, namely to tie the minim together. So let's start with the assumption that both the Chachamim and Rav Shimon ben Yehud Sadak hold of that. Furthermore, let's assume we are finin lulav misukkah. Furthermore, let's assume that we learn the lulav from the sukkah. Just like by sukkah, you need tasev alaymina asui. So also by the lulav, you need that, even though by the lulav it doesn't actually say the word tasev. Dichtiv gabi sukkah tasev alaymina asui. Now by sukkah, it says tasev, and we learn from that it can't be from something that's already made. So in other words, the idea is we wouldn't be learning it by a Zeta Shava or something. We'd be learning it by a Binyanab. Just like by a Sukkah, you have a Maiseh, and the Torah wants that it should be Veloimina Asu. The same thing should be by Lulav. Actually, the Pnei Yeshua wants to say that maybe we can't learn exclusively from Sukkah. Maybe we have to additionally learn from the combination of Sukkah and Tzitzis. Because after all, you could shrug it up. You could point out Sukkah is noyig by night as well as by day, whereas Lulav is only noyig by day, so therefore you need Tzitzis as well. Anyway. So my lab v'ha kamitzvim. So now on the face of it, then now we can understand the machlokes of the chachamim and Rav Shimon by Yehud Tzadik that way. The man the machshir savra amin and gavis sukkah titzas and zuriyas yasan. The one who says it's kosher, the chachamim, say that when it comes to the sukkah, cutting off the ivy is enough to be considered an asiya and to make the sukkah kosher, which is like Rav is saying. Well, then applying that to the lulav, the same thing, picking the berries off would be the doing that's needed. You don't need anything else. Keep in mind, we're talking about the lulav has already been bound, and necessarily the binding has to have been done before Yom Tov. You can't bind them on Yom Tov, because binding them, according to the opinion, lulav tzarech eged, binding them necessarily involves a knot, and you can't do that on Yom Tov. So therefore, necessarily, we're talking about they're already bound, which is the equivalent of having the ivy already on the sukkah. And on the face of it, if we're saying it's kosher, would mean you were over on Dibrei Chachamim, fine, but the fact is the berries are gone now. And Tasav Alomina also, according to that, is not a problem because the picking off the berries is the asiyah that you need. Who says it's possible would say we don't say that by the sukkah. It's not enough to cut off the ivy. You also need to lift it up. Applying that to the lulav, then that would mean it's not enough to pick off the berries. You'd also have to remove the hadasim and replace them, and you can't really do that because you can't rebind them on Yom Tov. So therefore we'd say it's possible. So he would say you don't say by sukkah that cutting off the ivy is considered the asiya that's needed to make the sukkah kosher. You need something more than that. So by that logic, you would say the same thing by the lulav. So that would explain the machlokas then. However, the Gemara says loy. Not necessarily do you have to understand the machlokas that way. Both the Chachamim and Reb Shimon Bar Yehud Tzadok might agree that when it comes to the sukkah, it's not enough to just cut them off. You need to also pick up the ivy and replace it. So what about the lulav? The Chachamim and Melech lulav mi sukkah kamitzvah. The machlokas would be: can you learn the lulav from the sukkah? Can we apply that rule to say that Tasav Alamin Asi would apply to it? The Chachamim say it's kosher. They say you can't learn lulav from sukkah. Because, okay, you have a binyan av, very nice. The fact is, you need at least something where the Torah tells you need an asiyah. Here, if you say that, not necessarily, that the Torah never even says by the lulav anything implying doing or making or whatever. So there's no basis for saying that a binyan av should apply to it. Whereas Reb Shimon Yehud Tzadok says we could learn lulav from sukkah. So in that case, the machlokas could easily have been presented just as well about what happens if you pick them before Yom Tov. Why does it have to present it if you pick them on Yom Tov? So Rashi later on in that sugya in Perek Gimel, Tosfos brings it over here, is that, precisely the point that we were just saying, that the machlokas has to be about when they were already bound, and therefore if it said about taking off the berries on Erev Yom Tov, you wouldn't know, because Erev Yom Tov the lulav not necessarily bound yet. You could take off the berries first and then bind it. So that would be a reason why it's presented in that way, to tell us that the machlokas is specifically when you took them off after they were already bound. That's according to Rashi. Tosfos over here brings a couple of other reasons why it presents the machlokas about Yom Tov. One of them is, the Gemara is going to discuss later in that sugya on Daf Lamed Gimel, the question whether we apply a rule called dichui over here. Do we say that because it was possible for the mitzvah, because it had too many black or red berries before Yom Tov, therefore it's pushed off and it can't become kosher for the mitzvah afterwards? And this is called so we say over there, ein dichui eitzel mitzvahs. When it comes to mitzvahs, we don't apply that concept and we say it still is usable. So that would be another reason to present it when it happened on Yom Tov, because if it happened Erev Yom Tov, you can't really call it dichui, the mitzvah doesn't apply yet. And then Tosfos gives another reason, because if it was Erev Yom Tov, practically speaking, what's the problem? You undo your binding of the lulav, take off the berries, rebind it, and you're done. Anyway, the point is, so we can understand that the machlokes is just, do we b'chlal learn lulav from Sukkah? The Ibai is saying, yet another possibility.
Regarding, one second.
Yeah.
Regarding the lulav, it says, Ulkastem lachem es peri hadar.
Yeah.
What is it said by the lulav and by the adas?
It says, oh, by all of them together. Ulkastem lachem peri hadar, creates hadar, kapis tmarim, ba'anafetz orvis ra'abe nochol, usmachem, lachem hashem lakechem shivas yamim. That's the whole pasuk about the Dalad minim.
Right. Isn't that an asiya to bind them? It doesn't use the word asiya, but it's like an asiya, isn't it?
The you take for yourselves. That could mean that you take them individually. It could mean that if you pick up the lulav, and then you pick up the hadassim, and then you pick up the arabas, and then you pick up the esrog, then you also get it. Which is, in fact, the halacha. The halacha is lulav ein sarach eged, as we're going to talk about now. But let's go on, and we'll see. So the ibay seima is vidalan the lulav sarach eged. If we were to hold that the lulav requires binding, then sure, everybody would agree that you have to learn lulav from Sukkah, sort of because, like you're saying, because then implicitly there is an asiya involved, even if the Torah doesn't spell it out. Nevertheless, the fact that you have to bind them constitutes an asiya. But But you could say the machlokas is on that very point. Mar sava tzarech eged or mar sava ein tzarech eged. Namely, Reb Shimon bar Yochai Tzadok is going to hold that the lulav, that the three minim of the lulav require binding, and without that you're not yotze. Therefore, there's an asiya. Therefore, we would say you have to learn that from Sukkah. And Umar Saba, where's the Chachamim hold? Ein Tzarech Eged, it doesn't, and therefore there's no asiya by the Dalad minim b'chlal to even talk about learning from the Sukkah. Or the plug to the Hani Tanoi, in which case then the Chalukas between the Chachamim and Rav Shimon bar Yochai Tzadok is the same as between other Tanoim. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, lulav ben ogud ben she'ene ogud kosher. The Chachamim say that the lulav is kosher whether the minim are bound together or not. Rav Yehuda oimer ogud kosher she'ene ogud posel. And Rav Yehuda says only if it's bound together is it kosher, and if not, then it's posel. Now, my time at the Rav Yehuda, so why does Rav Yehuda hold that it has to be bound together? After all, it doesn't say so in the posel. So the answer is Yalach Lekicha Lekicha Me Agudas Ezer, because he learns Xeder Shava on the word Lekicha from the bundle of Ezer. Ksiv Hasam Okachtam Agudas Ezer, by the Korban Pesach in Mitzrayim, it says you should take a bundle of Ezer, so it uses the same word Lekachtam, Oksiv Hachal Okachtam Lechem Bayimirishin, here it says you should take for yourself on the first day, therefore Malahalan Ba'aguda Afkanami Ba'aguda. Therefore, over there it must be bound together, because by definition an Aguda means three things that are bound together. We'll discuss that point again on Dr. Gimel. Afkan nami ba'aguda. Therefore, he says the same way, the minimum of the lulav also have to be bound together. V'rabbanan, and then Rabbanan answer to that. L'kicham l'kicha lo yalfinan. They don't learn this Zeder Shava because they didn't learn this Zeder Shava from their Rebbeim. We know it is a general rule, a person cannot come up with a Zeta Shava on their own after have learned it the Kabbalah from their Rebbeim. So Rabbi Yehuda had a Kabbalah of this Zeta Shava of the word Lakachtim. The Chachamim didn't. Therefore, they say that you don't need to do Lakicha. So then applying that to all Machlokes of the Chachamim and Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai Tzadok, the same thing. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai Tzadok would hold like Rabbi Yehuda. They have to be bound. Therefore, there is an Asiya. And therefore, once there's an Asiya, we can talk about that you learn from Sukkah and say, just like by the Sukkah, cutting off the ivy is not enough. You also have to move them. The same way by the lulav, taking off the berries is not enough. You would also have to unbind and rebind them. And again, being that it's Yom Tov, you can't do that. Whereas the Chachamim would hold to begin with. It doesn't require Eged, like the Chachamim, who disagree with Rabbi Yehuda, and therefore they would say there's no Asiya to learn from Sukkah altogether. The Ritva points out, what the Gemara is doing over here is it wants to explain that both the Chachamim and Rav Shimon bar Yochai Tzadok are going within Shmuel's opinion, because Rav's opinion we had a question on before. We brought a braisa that implied that just cutting off the ivy is not enough. You actually have to move it as well. And we said that, and we had through that, actually the braisa had also talked about a case where you put on tzitzis and then you cut off the ends of the strings. And we said it's possible. According to Rav, that would be a question, because according to him, because he had said it's kosher, so we left it with kasha, which, okay, kasha is not a tzuvda. It means that Rav would have a way of answering it. He could understand that this machlokas of Rav Shimon bar Yair Tzadok and the Chachamim, he could understand it like the original way we understood it. That's the same as the machlokas between himself and Shmuel, and then say, fine, I'm holding like Rav Shimon bar Yair Tzadok, or I'm holding rather like the Chachamim. But nevertheless, the Gemara leaves it as kasha, because we see that it's not necessarily that you have to understand it that way, and it's more logical to understand the machlokas in another way. In any case, the halacha is like Shmuel, first of all because of that, and also because early on the Amud we said that Levi and Rav Masna also said that the halacha is like Shmuel, that cutting them off is not enough, you have to move them, and cutting off the ends of the tzitzis strings is not enough, you have to untie and retie them. The halacha, therefore, is like Shmuel. Therefore, the Gemara really wants to explain the machlokas of Rav Shimon bar Yair Tzadok and the Chachamim also in accordance with that. The Gemara says, "Keman ozlo hodatanya." Which opinion does it follow? This is what it says in a brisa. Lulav mitzvah lo'egdoi. It's a mitzvah to bind together the lulav. The imloy ogdei kosher. But if you didn't bind it together, then it's still kosher. So which of those two opinions does it follow? Rabbi Yehuda. If you're going to say it's like Rabbi Yehuda, kilay ogdei amai kosher. Why should it be kosher if you didn't bind it? According to him, we learn from the gzeira shava of the lakachtim that you must bind them. And when in Tosfos says a rule in some places that when it comes to things d'oraisa, you don't say l'hatchila and b'diyevet. When we talk about l'hatchila and b'diyevet in halacha, that's in things d'rabbanan. So if according to Rabbi Yehuda, the requirement to bind them is d'oraisa, then you can't say b'diyevet if you didn't, it's kosher. So according to him, how would that work? E-rabbanan amai mitzvah. And according to the Chachamim, there's no source for it in the Torah at all, so why should there be a mitzvah to bind them in the first place? The answer is la'olam rabbanon. He actually, that brisa we can say is according to the rabbanon. Umeshum shenem mazek keli v'andeu. As the pasuk says, this is my God and I will glorify him, meaning his snow, the fun of the mitzvahs. You have to be beautiful before Hashem in mitzvahs. And among other things, which the brisa in Masechet Shabbos brings on this is that you should make a beautiful lulav. So what's one way of making it beautiful is by binding them together. Therefore, the Chacham are going to say, and that's why you should do that. But yeah, but if you didn't, then fine, it wasn't a beautiful mitzvah, but nevertheless, it's still kosher. Okay. Next, the Mishnah had said, Zeh HaKlal, Kol Davar Shemekabel Tumah Chula. The Mishnah had given us a general rule. Anything that's Mekabel Tumah or doesn't grow from the ground, you can't use Fitzchach. Anything that's not Mekabel Tumah and grows from the ground, as long as it's detached from the ground, as we said, you can use Fitzchach. So the Gemara says, Minahani Mili. Where do we know this from? That schach has to be something that grows from the ground, is not makabel tumah. Omer is shlokish, omakra, because you have a pasuk by Maaseh Bereishis that says, the aid yala mina oret. That says, a cloud came up from the earth and watered the whole, and then watered the whole world before Adam davened for rain. Now, the sukkah is to remember the Ananiya covered. Therefore, the Ananiya covered can be considered something that grows from the ground, and therefore we can draw an analogy. Ma'ed davashen makabel tumah, a cloud is not makabel tumah, but gidula min ha'aretz, and based on this pasuk, the aid yala min ha'aretz, we can say that it grows from the ground. Af sukkah davashen makabel tumah, but gidula min ha'aretz. The same way, the sukkah, and as we said at the beginning of the Masechta, it's the schach that's considered the essential sukkah. The walls are not really considered the sukkah. Therefore, we learn from that the schach has to be something that grows from the ground and is not makabel tumah. Tosfos, a little further in the sugya, on Yudbeis Amud Aleph, explains that Rabbi Yochanan b'chlal holds that you have the pasuk the Eid Yalam in Aretz. That was a one-time thing, but ordinarily he says clouds come from above. They don't come from the earth. So therefore, they can't really be considered gedulei karka at all. So Rabbi Yochanan is going to need a different way of learning it, as the Gemara is going to say. You have a similar machlokas, by the way, between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua in Masechta Tainis about where the clouds form from. Where one of them, I think Rabbi Yeshua, says that they come from the Ukiyonus, from the ocean, and Rabbi Eliezer says to him, but the ocean is salty water, the clouds are fresh water, and he tells him, Mismatkin ba'avir, actually it's not so much where the clouds come from, it's rather where rain comes from. Does rain come from Lamaila, and then it's sent down to the clouds, and then from there to earth, or is it that water evaporates from the earth and forms the clouds? So not quite the same, but it's related. Anyway. So the Gemara says, okay, that works out according to the opinion that the Sukkos that we're commemorating on the Yom Tov of Sukkos is the Anane Kavod, and therefore, in other words, we're showing our gratitude for Hashem, to Hashem that He protected us with Anane Kavod in the desert, and therefore we make Sukkos. So then, fine, we can learn from the clouds. But if you say that we're commemorating the actual sukkahs that the Jewish people built to live in the desert, and in that case, then it's more that we're commemorating their bitachon in the Eibishter, and we're commemorating that once upon a time we were nomads living in booths in the desert, and now we're living in Eretz Chem, the Toiv Rechava, etc. So then, my ikal meima. So according to that, what are you going to say? How are we learning from clouds? And the Tanya, in fact, that's a machlokes. We learn in a Braisa when it says Kiva Sukkos Eshavdias Bnei Israel Anane Kavod Hoyu Divir Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer says this refers to the Anane Kavod. Rabbi Akiva Omer Sukkos Mamash Also Lahem. And Rabbi Akiva says it means actual Sukkos that they built for themselves. Therefore, Honicha Rabbi Eliezer. So Rish Lakish's Limud will work out nicely according to Rabbi Eliezer. Ella, Rabbi Akiva, Ma'ik Lamemer. But according to Rabbi Eliezer, what are you going to say? It's interesting, by the way, that in Shulchan Aruch it brings only the reason of Anane Kavod. So usually in a Machlokes in Halacha, Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva, usually we pass him like Rabbi Akiva. Maybe the vote is because he was not really Negei La Halacha, so therefore we can pass him like Rabbi Eliezer. It does bring by me in the notes also that you have in Torah's Koyanim, it has different mandamas, and Rabbi Eliezer says Sukkos Mamish, and Rabbi Lazar rather says Sukkos Mamish, and Rabbi Shimon says Anani Akavod, so then maybe we'll pass him like Rabbi Shimon over Rabbi Lazar. Okay, anyway. So if you say that there was Sukkos Mamish, then how are you understanding the criteria for Sach? So he also Rav Dimi, Omer Rav Yechanan, so when Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he explained in the name of Rav Yechanan a different reason. Omer Kro, because the Pasuk says, Chag HaSukkos Tas Lecha. You should make for yourself a Chag, which the simple meaning, it means a Yom Tov, but the word Chag also means the Korban Chagiga. So Chag HaSukkos Tas Lecha, Makish Sukkah LeChagiga, it means that it's comparing the Sukkah to the Chagiga. Ma Chagiga, now the Korban Chagiga that you bring during the Yom Tov, it's a live animal. Dovashen Makabal Tuma, it's something which is not Makabal Tuma of a Gedulei Min HaAretz, and it grows from the ground. Now, in what sense do animals grow from the ground? Indirectly, because they eat plants which grow from the ground. For certain other purposes in Halacha, we do in fact consider animals to be Gedulei Karka. Rashi and Tosfos both refer over here that in connection with Maisa Sheni, when we say what kind of foods are you allowed to buy in your shalayim with Maisa Sheni money, you're allowed to buy meat. Why? Because the animals, we learn by a klal of prat, a klal over there, that it has to be pre the gedulei karka. Animals are considered gedulei karka because they live off plants which grow from the ground. So therefore, according to that, so they're saying the same thing over here, the chagiga is gedulei min ha'aretz, and it's a live animal, so it's not makabel tuma. Asuka, dovashenim makabel tuma, gedulei min ha'aretz. The sukkah, therefore, would have to be the same thing. However, the question then is, in that case, why don't we say that the chagiga is a live animal, therefore the sukkah would have to be an animal as well, which could mean then, conceivably, it could mean that schach could consist, besides for plant material, it could also consist of animal skins or whatever. Or maybe even if the animal skins are makabel tuma, because eventually animal skins can be processed and be makabel tuma. Or maybe it means exclusively animals. How do you know that it means plants b'chlal? So that doesn't work. And in fact, Rashi points out, according to Rabbi Yochanan's limud, it would come out that you should be allowed to use leather for your sach, because it is according to that definition, is gedulei karka. However, we're not going to stick with that. We're going to rather give a different derivation that Rovin is going to give us in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, where animals are excluded, and therefore leather or any other animal products are in fact possible for sach. So he also Rovin Amar Rabbi Yochanan Amakra. No, but the pasuk says something. The pasuk says ba'osbecha migonecha umiyikvecha. The pasuk says you should make a yom tov of sukkahs when you gather in from your threshing floor and from your wine press. Now that means the psoilus goyin v'yekiv hakos of the davar. So the pasuk is telling us to use the leftovers from your gurdon and from your yekiv, meaning in other words, your gurdon is where you thresh your grain. So therefore, afterwards, you take out the clean grain, and eventually you bring it into your house, and then you have the straw and the stubble and whatever that's left, and that's the psoilus of that. Same thing with the yekiv. You bring in your bunches of grapes into the wine press. You press them into wine. Afterwards, you have a bunch of grape stems and grape branches left, and those are the kinds of things you can use for schach. So the question is, the Ava Gordon Atma, the Yekav Atma. Why? Who says? Maybe it means the actual Gordon and the actual Yekav. So maybe it means that you can make, for example, you can use the straw with the grain in it, and you can use the grape vines and grape branches with the grapes on it. Now, grapes and grain are makabel truma, because they're food. They're able to be makabel truma seichlin. So then that would take off the rule of not being makabel truma. Rav Zera says, yeah, but look, if it was only Gerden, then fine. But since it mentions Yekiv, which is the wine press, the Eshel Asakach, once you've crushed the grapes into wine, you can't use them for tzach, obviously. Necessarily, therefore, it must be that we're not talking about the grapes which are turned into wine themselves. We're talking about what do you have left at the end of the Yekiv process. You have, there's wine, and then there's the grapevines and stems and things. So obviously, therefore, you can't use the wine itself. Therefore, it has to be that we're talking about the stems. However, maskif for Rabbi Yirmiyah, but Rabbi Yirmiyah says, why? Maybe you could find a way to use wine as schach. The Eime Yayin Korur Shabom Sneer, conceivably it could mean hardened wine that comes to sneer, through Dremele Gulei Dvela, which resembles cakes of pressed figs. They used to, in those times, they would take figs and press them, dry them, and press them together into large cakes. And then they could cut slices of them when they needed some food to take along with them, The same way, you have this Yayin Kodosh, which resembles that in consistency. Now, Kodosh means hardened, so it can either mean wine that was left to dry for a long time, so it became kind of like fruit leather. We could be describing something like that. Or the word Kodosh sometimes also means frozen. The fact that we're mentioning it comes from sneer. Sneer, as we had in this week's parasha, Sidonim Yukur L'chayim and Syrian Vayomer Yukur L'chayim sneer, and Rashi points out that in some languages the word sneer means snow. Mount Sneer is what's better known as Mount Hermon, the tallest mountain in Eretz Yisrael, and it's snow-capped all year round. So it could mean Yayin Kodesh Abom Sneer could mean that they take wine, they mix it with snow or ice from Sneer, and they have grape popsicles, they have wine popsicles. So whatever the case, those are solid, conceivably, whether we're talking about fruit leather or whether we're talking about wine ice. Either way, it's something solid. You could conceivably use it for schach. So maybe the Torah is telling us that you could. And therefore, again, the thing about being makabel truma goes away. Because wine popsicles or frozen or congealed wine or fruit leather, as the case may be, is going to be makabel truma. It is food. And maybe the Torah is telling us that you could use it. Rav Zera says, look what happened over here. Hom milsa haba biyadon. We thought we had this in our hands. We thought we had this in the bag. It's all done. But also Rav Yirmiyah, Rav Yirmiyah, and Rav Yirmiyah came and took an axe to it and cut it off. In other words, now we don't know how we know that schach cannot be makabel truma. However, Rav Ashi later on comes and saves the situation. He says, yeah, but me gornecha. Look at the pasuk and say you should use gornecha v'yikvecha. It says me gornecha, from your granary, meaning v'loy gordon atzmai, not the actual gordon itself, which is the food, the wheat or the barley or whatever it is that you get after the threshing process. Mi yikvecha means v'loy yekav atzmai. And the word mi yikvecha means from your wine press, meaning not the actual product of the wine press, but rather the psoilus, the byproduct that you have left after it's done. So therefore, we see that though that's what you can use for schach and not the wine, not even if it's frozen or congealed, like Rav Yirmiyah said. Rav Chista Amar Mehocha. Rav Chista says, I have a different source that schach has to be davka from naturally grown products and things that are not makabel truma. You have a pasuk in Sefer Nehemiah. Rashi actually refers to it as Sefer Ezra because the Gemara tells us in Bava Basra and Sanhedrin that originally what we have now is the books of Ezra and Nehemiah was originally one long book. later the Gemara explains that actually you have a large part of it was written by Nehemiah, but the Gemara explains that Nehemiah lost the privilege to have it named after him for reasons that the Gemara explains over there. He spoke a little too highly about himself, and he criticized the people who came before him, and so forth. Eventually, when the Goyim divided, the Goyim 700-800 years ago, when they created the divisions of Prakim that we have nowadays, they also split some of the longer Sfarim in two. So one of them was they split Ezra into two books and called them Ezra and Nehemiah, and that's how we have it printed in our Nachs nowadays. The Chidah actually has an interesting take on it. He says that he brings, I think, from Sefer HaGogolim, that Ezra and Nehemiah were nisgalgal respectively in Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and Rabbi Gamliel. Now, we know the whole story, how Rabbi Gamliel was deposed from the Nasius for a while, and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was appointed instead, and eventually they shared the Nasius. So he says maybe eventually after that, then it was decided, Min HaShemayim, that Nehemiah has had enough punishment for whatever he did wrong over there that it says in the Gemara and Sanhedrin, and therefore after all, he can have his Sefer named after him. In any case, Rashi over here lives before all this took place. So he refers to it as Sefer Ezra. And the Pasuk describes over there how Ezra and Nehemiah and the Levium and all are telling the people to keep the mitzvah of Sukkot. And they tell them, Su'u ha'har, go out to the mountains, v'haviu alei zayis, bring leaves of olive trees, v'alei eit shemen, and leaves from oil trees, which is a different kind of tree, like a balsam tree or a pine tree or whatever, where the tree has oil in it. Ba'alei hadas, and leaves of hadasim. Ba'alei tmorim, and leaves of palm trees. Ba'alei eitz avos, and leaves of eitz avos. With thick trees, which on the face of it is hadas also. And the Gemara is going to ask about that now. The point is, they're telling them you have to use those things for schach, and all of those are things that grow from the ground, and all of those are things that are not makabel truma, because they're unprocessed. Therefore, we learn from that. Now, we're not really learning from that, because you can't learn from the pasuk in Nach, to learn for a din d'oraisa, but it's kind of a gilui milsa ba'alma. Given that, the Torah is telling us that you have to use migonecha or miyikvecha, and we need some clarity what that means, then the pasuk in Nehemiah clarifies for us that it means the actual leaves themselves rather than the actual food that's attached to them. By the way, we have later on in the Masechta, we have an opinion of Rabbi Yehuda that says that you can only use things from the Dalad Minim, because most of these things that are listed in the Psukim are from the Dalad Minim. And he explains that the other ones you can use for the walls, but you have to use Dalad Minim for Schach. The Halacha, of course, is not like that. Anyway, the question is, when we say Halei Hadas and Halei Eitz Avos, Hainu Hadas, Hainu Eitz Avos, aren't those the same thing? When the Torah lists the Dalad Minim, L'kachem L'chamei Yemarishin, Priei Tzaber, Kapis Tmonim, Ba'anaf Eitz Avos, is Hadasim. So why here in the Pasuk in Nehemiah is it listing them separately? What it is like this. Within the min called Hadassim, you have the ones that are usable for the lulav, where they have three leaves growing on the same level all around. Hadassim, Shaloshim, as we buy them nowadays in the store. And then you have what's called Hadas Shoita, where they don't grow three in a row. They grow two in one place and one in another or whatever. So they're the same species, but they're not in the right configuration. So therefore, Nehemiah and the other leaders are telling them that for the sukkah, you can use both. They're telling them, gather together the things you're going to need for the sukkah and for lulav and esrog. For the sukkah, you can use both. But for the dalad minim, you're not going to need to use alei eitz avos, the ones that are thick leaves, that have three in a row, and then the other ones that are plain hadassim, those you can use for yischach. So in any case, we see from that also that the schach has to be something that grows from the ground, which all of these things do, and something which is not makabel truma, which none of these things are. Okay. Next, the Mishnah says, chavile kash, bundles of straw, v'chavile etzim, or bundles of wood, v'chavile zrodin, or bundles of zrodin. Rashi describes that zrodin is a type of reeds, a type of bamboo, or reeds or something that branch out, they form branches, and then you cut the branches apart, and you bind them together. When they're fresh, they're used as animal food, and when they dry, then they use them for firewood. So whatever, all of these things are typically bundled in bundles. Ein mesachchin behen, you're not allowed to use such bundles for schach for reasons that the Gemara is going to explain. Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi that the definition of a bundle for this purpose is at least 25 units. V'cholon sheitiron cheres, all of these kinds of bundles. If you undo the bundle, then they're kosher. B'cholim, k'sheres, b'dechanes, and all of them are also kosher, all of them, and for that matter, all the things that we said before, that are possible for schach, are kosher for the walls. Because again, only the schach is called, only the sukkah is called that only because of the schach. The walls are not called sukkah. Rashi mentioned, now we did learn previously, we talked about how many walls the sukkah needs to have, and we learned that from the word basukas and basukas and whatever, but there it's not really from the word basukah itself, it's rather from the fact that the Torah repeated the word basukah several times, and that gave us words available for a drosha. But the essential meaning of sukkah is the sach, therefore we don't care what the walls are made out of. Okay. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Yaakov, Shamis Mene de Rav Yechanan Tauti. I heard from Rav Yechanan the explanation of two things in Mishnayos, in our parak. Chodaha, one of them is our Mishnah, that you can't use bundles for schach. The idach, and the other one that I heard an explanation from him was, when it said later on in the parak, hachotek begodish, if a person digs out in a pile of straw, lasis lois sukkah, to make for himself a sukkah, so in other words, you have the straw on top, he wants to be, will become the schach, and the straw, and then he'll dig out a hollow in there that will be the three walls of the sukkah. Ain't a sukkah, so the Mishnah says it's not a sukkah. So now, Rabbi Yaakov says, so I heard from Rabbi Yechon an explanation on the reason why these two things are possible. Chodem Mishum Gzeiras Oitzer, one of them he said was possible because of a Gzeira of Oitzer, that a person might, as the Gemara is going to explain soon, but Oitzer, an Oitzer is a storage house. In other words, that Midaraisa, there's a certain kind of sukkah that would be kosher. The Chachamim were concerned that if a certain kind of sukkah, and we're not, that's what Rabbi Yaakov is saying, I'm not sure which of these two we're talking about, that if it's going to be kosher, then a person is not going to bother building a sukkah. He's just going to take a corner of his Oitzer, corner of his storage house that he doesn't use the rest of the year, and use that as a sukkah and have done with it. He's not going to actually make a sukkah. Now, you don't have to make a l'shem sukkah, fine, but it has to be made at least that the schach was placed there, as we learned the other day, l'shem tzeil, for the sake of shade, and he's not going to do that. So therefore, that would be a reason why the Chachamim would say that a certain kind of sukkah, which is kosher d'araisa, is posel d'rabanan. So that was one of them. V'chada mishum tasev alayman asui. The other one was possible on a daraisa level because tasev alayman asui. V'lo yadayna heiminayim mishum oitzer v'heiminayim mishum tasev alayman asui. I don't know which is which. Between our Mishnah and the case of the pile of straw, the haystack, which one is possible daraisa and which one is possible d'rabbanan? The Pnei Yeshua actually asked, why wasn't it fairly obvious? The Gemara is going to point out soon that you have in one place over here, it says Ein Masachin Behen. Later on, it says Ein Asuka. Wouldn't that alone imply that this one is Derabanan and the other one is Deraisa? He says, yeah, but on the other hand, Rabbi Yaakov figured maybe on the other hand, it's more likely that the Tana would first list the things that are possible Deraisa and only then start talking about things that are possible Derabanan. Okay, so I'm not sure which. Amr of Yumiya, so Rav Yumiya says, Nechzi Anan. Well, let's consider. We'll be able to figure it out. The Amr of Chia Ba'aba Amr of Yechanan, Mipnei Ma Amru Chavile Kash V'Chavile Eitzim V'Chavile Zrodin Ein Mesachin Behen. Why did the Chachamim say that bundles of these various things, which after all, straw and wood and Zrodin are in and of themselves kosher for Tzach, so why are the Chachamim saying don't make Tzach with them? Pa'amim Sh'odam Bomin Asada Be'erev, because sometimes it happens. A person comes home from the field in the evening, he has on his shoulder a bundle of wood or straw or whatever. He just puts it to dry on top of the sukkah. Now, we don't mean a sukkah for sukkahs. We mean, for example, a sukkah that he has for his animals or whatever. So it's not something that necessarily needs shade. So now he just puts it up there to dry. You have a framework over there of wool that the animal, as a pen for the animal. So now he puts it on top of there. He b'chlal didn't put it on there for the purpose of shade. He puts it on there in order to dry it. Later on, he changes his mind and decides he wants to use it for schach. And the Torah is telling us that you have to make the sukkah, not that it's already made. And in this case, when you put it on, not for the sake of shade, then it would be tasev aleimen asu. Therefore, that implies that this one that we're talking about over here is only posel d'rabbanan. Daraisa, we wouldn't be concerned about that if he taka put on the bundle l'shem schach. Now, keep in mind, our Mishnah, when it's telling us that you can't use a bundle, means even if you put it on there, l'shem schach, then you still can't use it because of this gzera. In other words, daraisa, if you took a bundle of wood or whatever and put it on there, having in mind you're putting it on l'shem schach, then it would be perfectly fine. Only d'rabbanan, because of this problem that you might be confused with the case where you put it on there not l'shem schach. Therefore, our Mishnah is talking about a psul d'rabbanan. And by the way, in Shulchan Aruch, it mentions there's a distinction. If taka a person puts on a bundle, not l'shem schach, but the problem is the gzera d'rabbanan over here, the bundle, it's enough for him to untie it. He doesn't have to then lift up the pieces because since it's only a gzera d'rabbanan, then that's enough. On the other hand, if he put it on there, not l'shem schach in the first place, if he taka put it on there to dry or for some other purpose, and now he wants to use it for schach, then he has to not only untie it, he has to also lift up the pieces because then otherwise you have passive lemon also. So in any case, the case in our Mishnah where he put it on there l'shem schach is only a gzera d'rabbanan. Therefore, midahal mishum gzeiras oitzer. Therefore, by elimination, if our Mishnah is because of the gzeira of oitzer, necessarily hal mishum tasev elemen also. Then necessarily, the later Mishnah about the case of the person digging out in the haystack must be a psul daraisa because of tasev elemen also. So there's your answer. So the question is, why didn't Rabbi Yaakov know that? Rabbi Yaakov had not heard of the statement of Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba. Once he hears it, then sure, that clarifies things. But where he didn't know, he hadn't heard that, and therefore he wasn't sure. And Omer Rav Ashi, and Rav Ashi says, I have to wonder about Rabbi Yaakov, what was he thinking in the first place? Well, really, the question is not so much, Mephoshim explained, that the question is not so much on Rabbi Yaakov, the question is rather not on Rabbi Yaakov's question, but rather on what Rabbi Yaakov is saying in the name of Rabbi Yechanan. Where he's saying, Rabbi Yechanan said that one of these cases is only Dirabbanan, the only one is strictly Daraisa. So why do we have to assume that? When you think of it, both things apply, which is why Rabbi Yaakov had the question in the first place. In our Mishnah, you have the problem of Gzeiras Otzer, but you're going to say you don't have the problem of Tasev Leiman Osui? What do you mean? I mean, the fact is, if you put on bundles over there, like we said, where a person comes home in the evening and puts his bundle up there to dry, that is going to be classic Tasev Leiman Osui. So what are you telling me? That our Mishnah is only because of Gzeiras Otzer, is only Dirabbanan. And vice versa. And when it comes to digging out the haystack, don't you think the Chachamim would have reason to passel it, even if you were going to say it was kosher daraisa, that the Chachamim would additionally have the reason to passel it, because otherwise you're not going to make a sukkah, you're just going to use something where you already have straw piled up or whatever. So both things apply to both cases. So in other words, our Mishnah might be, let's say, for example, Rashi says, you took off the bundles and you put them back on l'shem sukkah. It's still going to be possible because of gzeiras oitzer, because after all, you put it on them to begin with, not for the sake of sukkah. And the same thing with the haystack. So why is Rabbi Yechanan telling us that only one thing applies to each of these Mishnayos when you could equally well apply both of them? But Rabbi Yechanan, Amalach, Rabbi Yechanan is going to answer you the reason why we have to say in each case it's only one issue, because you have to look at the wording of the Mishnah. Hacha dekatani ein mesachin behen l'chatchilahu. Our Mishnah, when it says you should not use the mesach, implies something only l'chatchilah. The ein mesachin mishum gzeiras oitzer, implying you shouldn't use them for schach because of the gzeira of oitzer. Hadar raisa shaper dami, implying that daraisa, that would be fine. Hasim the katani ain't a sukkah, whereas in the later Mishnah it says it's not a sukkah, implying after the diyeved daraisa nami ain't a sukkah, implying that even the diyeved it's no good. So in other words, in our Mishnah we're talking about he did put them on for schach. The only problem is dirabbanan. So we're not talking about a problem daraisa at all, because then it wouldn't say ain't a sakrin. It would have said ain't a sukkah like it does later on. So on the other hand, by the chotet begodesh it's possible daraisa. And what would that be? Necessarily, it has to be where he didn't move the top hay. Rashi explains, if he went and moved the top hay, then for sure there's no problem. Then there's no reason to make gzeira, because obviously he realized what was wrong and went and fixed it up. The interesting thing is over here, because even midiyavid it's not a valid sukkah. An interesting point over here, though, is that the Gemara seems to be using kind of a hybrid expression. Because first it's talking about Dieved, it's talking about Dieved versus Daraisa. That's not how it goes. It's Dieved versus Rachila, and Dirabbanan versus Daraisa. So in fact, Tosfos takes out some words in the Gemara over here and takes out the part about, takes out the part about Dieved and says that we're talking lachatchila. We don't say lachatchila. It's not a matter of Dieved and lachatchila. It's a matter of Daraisa and Darabanan. There are other Rishonim who learn the other way around, that the correct Girsa is Dieved and lachatchila and not Daraisa and Darabanan. On the other hand, there are a couple of Achronim, I think the Oruch Haner and some others, explain that maybe you can end for the Gemara over here. And they explain, the Prima Godim also explained, there's a difference between two kinds of Dieved. You have lachatchila and bidyeved, where there's a lachatchila where a person goes and asks the Rav, can I make a sukkah this way? And then the Rav will tell him that no. And then you have bidyeved where he already made it. But then you have also a lachatchila and bidyeved where if a person has no other sukkah, can he sit in that sukkah, which is possible, d'rabbanan, and Eden. And if you say that, if he has no other sukkah available, and you're going to tell him he can't use the sukkah even, which because it's possible that Abaran, he can't use it even with the Evet, then he has no place to eat, then he has no place to be in the mitzvah of sukkah, so maybe therefore we'll allow it. So we can for the girsa that we have over here, there is a daraisa versus d'rabbanan component over here, but even within d'rabbanan itself, you can distinguish between the different kinds of d'evet. More dinim about what you can and can't use for schach. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, sikacha b'chitzin z'chorim k'sheira. Now, when it comes to arrows, you have like this. You have the shaft of the arrow, which is made out of wood. You have the arrowhead, which is made generally out of metal. And you have to have some way of attaching them together. So you have two different ways of doing it. You have like that with modern tools and things like that as well. One way is that the blade or the arrowhead or whatever has a hole in it, and the end of the wooden shaft fits into that. You have that, for example, hammers are made that way. You look at a hammer, you have the wood goes into the hammer. Then you have some tools that are made the other way around, where the wooden handle has a hole in it. And there's a tang, there's a piece of the metal blade that sticks out and goes into there. Some knives, for example, are made that way. So now, when it comes to arrows, also, you have two different ways of making them. You can have arrowheads, and the Gemara is going to call them male and female, just like we have nowadays with plugs and things like that. So you can have where the arrowhead is the male piece, and it goes into a socket in the arrowhead. And you can have the other way around, where the arrowhead has a tang that goes into a hole in the arrow shaft. So Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, sikacha b'chitzin z'chorim k'sheira, if you use male arrow shafts, then as long as the arrowheads haven't been attached to them, then they're kosher, because those are plain pieces of wood, and they're not makabel tumah. So therefore, they fit with what we said in the Mishnah, that things that are not makabel tumah you can use. The nekevis psula. On the other hand, if you use female ones, then they're posel, because those have a head and those have a hole in them, and therefore they're a kli kibble. That head is able to take something inside it. Therefore, that piece of wood is makabel tumah. So the Gemara says, Zchorim Ksheira Pshita, isn't it obvious that male ones are kosher? What would be the reason to think that they should be posel? It's true, they're plain shafts, they don't have any holes or anything in them. Why would we think they should be kosher? They should be posel. And the answer is, Ma'u Detema, without Rabbi Yehuda telling us, you would have thought, Nigzus Zchorim Otter Nekevis. You would have thought that we should make a Gzera, that you can't use the male ones because you might mistakenly use the female ones instead. They're very easy to confuse. Kamash Malan, therefore we're being told that that's not a problem and we don't make such a Gzera. And Omamar, and we just said, Benekevis Psula, we said female arrow shaft apostle. So again, the question is Pshita. Obviously, they have a base kibble. They have a hole in the top of them. Therefore, they're able to hold something inside them. And that's the definition. When a wooden Kalim Makabal Chuma, when they have a Kli kibble. The answer is, Maudetem, a base kibble, also Lamalus, Loishme kibble. Fine. You might have thought that opening is going to eventually be filled up, and it's going to be filled up forever. Once you put in the arrowhead, you're not planning to take it out. So you would think that maybe that's not considered a kli kibble, kamash malan, and therefore Rav wants us to know that it is nevertheless considered a kli kibble, and therefore it is makabel tumah. Tosfos actually discusses that Tosfos mentioned briefly over here and in more detail earlier on Daf Hey that. Sometimes you have things that are not makabel tumah d'oraisa, but are makabel tumah d'rabbanan. Even when they're not a kli kibble. An example of that it mentions in Mishnayos and Kalim is a wooden board that a baker uses to roll out the dough on. So even though it's a flat wooden board, it's not a pli kibble, nevertheless, it's makabel truma de rabbanon. So Tosfos says, what about the arrow shafts over here, even the male ones? Why don't we say the same thing? And the gist is, Tosfos answers, if Tosfos goes into a long arichus on it, and dafhei, and explains that over there, it actually has, you're actually using it, you're putting things on top of it. You're putting the dough on top of it. Therefore, the rabbanon we consider as if it actually had a kli kibble, as if it actually had a hollow to it. Here, you're not putting anything on top of these arrows. All you're doing is you're attaching the arrowhead to them. Therefore, even the rabbanon, they have no reason to declare them makabel, to be makabel tumah. As far as vice versa, when we're saying over here about the female ones, because they're going to be filled up, Tosfos says it's actually not so simple. There's actually a machlokas on that point between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim, whether such a thing that's going to be filled up permanently, whether that's considered a kli kibble or not. So again, it might be that it's only possible to Rabbanon. So it might be, in other words, the Noda B'Yehuda explains our Gemara to be saying exactly that. They are, in fact, only possible to Rabbanon. Therefore, that's precisely why we're not saying that the male ones should be possible, because that would be a Gzeira to a Gzeira, and we don't do that. The Chachamim don't make a Gzeira on top of a Gzeira. So therefore, the female ones, fine. To Rabbanon, I'm a Kabbal Chumah. Therefore, we're going to say that they're possible. But the male ones would be exeter to exeter to say that. Okay. More about things that you can use for schach. Amar Rav Babachana Amar Rav Yechanan. Sikcha ba'anitze pishtan psula. If you put schach. Now you have like this. We're going to talk about flax. Now we have to consider when to turn the flax plant into linen. It goes through several stages, which we're going to be referring to here in the Gemara. The first thing you do, now you have like this, the flax fibers grow, they grow as fibers inside a stalk. So the first thing you have to do is you have to get them out of the stalk. So what the first thing you do then is you take the stalks and you soak them in order to soften the outer woody part of the stalk. Then you soak them, and for example, in the Gemara, in many places it uses the example, once you're soaking them, you have to take them out of the water exactly at a certain time, otherwise they're going to get ruined, because otherwise they're going to start rotting, and they're like this. You want the shell of it to start rotting away, but you don't want the fibers to start rotting away. So in the Gemara, always, for example, when you have soaking flax is a typical example of a dover ha'avod, something that, for example, you're allowed to do on Chol HaMoed if it comes time to do it, because otherwise the whole thing is going to be ruined. Anyway, so that's the first stage. Then you take them out and you dry them. Then you pound them in order to break the stalks and get out the fibers. Then you comb out the fibers, and then the last thing you do is you dry them in the oven. So Amar Rav Avachana Amar Rav Yechanan. Sikacha ba'anitze pishtan psula. If you use anitze pishtan for schach, then it will be possible. Rashi explains that anitze is that they've actually been combed and they've actually been dried in the oven. So Rashi explains then they're makabel tumah because they're able to become tummy from tzaras. Tosfos gets into a long explanation over here and says maybe not necessarily are they makabel tumah yet at that point. And so actually Tosfos says anitze pishtan doesn't necessarily mean the stage after they're dried in the oven. Anitze might refer actually to an earlier stage. However, Tosfos says because they're very close to the point when they're makabel tumah, then therefore that would be a reason to ask for them even though maybe they're not actually makabel tumah yet. There's a couple of other reasons given that we showed him give why they should be possible. The Rambam says because once they've been combed out, they don't look anything like something that grows from the ground anymore. You know, I don't know how many of us are old enough to remember the flax that they used to package a sirogim in before nowadays they put them in bubble wrap or whatever, you know, but that stuff, it didn't look like anything that grew from the ground. If you didn't know that it was, you know, yeah. So the Rambam says that's a reason it's possible, and the Ravid says yet another reason, because you could use it as stuffing for pillows, and once you could use it as stuffing, then it would be a makabel tumah that way. Anyway, so anitze pishtan is going to be possible. On the other hand, behutzne pishtan kshera. On the other hand, when it comes to hutzne pishtan, then it will be kosher. Hutznin is when it's still in the branches, and when it's still in the stalks, before you even soak it or pound it or anything. So then it's just like anything else that grows from the ground, and it's perfectly kosher. Vuhushne pishtan eini yadea. And, furthermore, Rabbi Yechanan says, as far as hushne pishtan, which is one of the intermediate stages, I don't know if they're kosher or fossil. And Rabbi Babachana, who's quoting this in the name of Rabbi Yechanan, he says, What does he mean? What does he mean? What do we not know about Hushne? The question is, what is Hushne? Manamshech. E diakul enough, it's Hushne Korizai. Do we mean that once you pounded it, which is the third stage, but before you combed it, which is the fourth stage, at that point, Hushni Karile, maybe at that point, so you've pounded it and removed the fibers, maybe at that point, we're already calling the fibers Hushni and saying that maybe you can or can't use those for sack, we're not sure. But if we only soaked it and we didn't yet pound it, then it would still be called Hushni. And it would still be kosher when they're in stage two, when they're being dried. Or maybe it's already called hushne once it was soaked, even before it was pounded. In other words, when it's still in stage two. So we're not sure, in short, whether... So in other words, stage one is definitely kosher. Stage five is definitely possible. The intermediate stage of the according to Tosfos, the Anitza Kishon means stage four, whatever. But stage two or three is what we're not sure what we're calling Hushne. Is that what we're calling Hushne or not? And we're not sure, in addition, whether Hushne are kosher for Tzach or not. Okay. Omer of Yehuda, Hani Shushi Shvatsri, these plants that are called Shushi and Shvatsri, Rashi gives French words for them, they're some kind of plants which are not edible. So Rashi first defines that they're various kinds of vegetables, and then Rashi brings from Reb Macher, who says that shvatsri is a kind of thing with large leaves that grows in forests. So maybe like ferns, or like it could be something like ferns or ivy or something. Anyway, misachin bahu, you're allowed to use those for tzach. Because even though they are edible in a pinch, but they're not generally edible, so therefore it's not considered something that's makabel trouble. On the other hand, Abaye Omer b'shushi nesachin b'shvatsri lenesachin. Abaye says, sure, you can use shushi, but you can't use shvatsri. My time of kibin desori rechayu, because they smell bad. Therefore, shavik lohu benafik. So therefore, the person is going to abandon his sukkah and leave. We want to have, after all, the sukkah has to be teshvu kain tadugu. You wouldn't live in a house which has a bad smell. So the same thing, you can't sit in a sukkah that has a bad smell like that. Similarly, Omer of Chonan bar Rava, Hani hizmi vihigi misachin bahu. You're allowed to use hizmi vihigi, which are various kinds of thorn bushes. You're allowed to use for sach. But similarly, Abaye Omer vihizmi misachinon. Sure, you can use hizmi vihigi lo misachinon, but you can't use higi. My time a kibin de natri tarpayu, because leaves are always falling off of them. Shavik, and therefore they're falling into your food. Shavik leven nafik. Again, you're going to leave it and go out of the sukkah, and it's not going to be teishvul kain taduri. So this is in fact the halacha. So besides the criteria that we had in the Mishnah, that you have to have something that grows from the ground and that's not makabel truma and that's detached from the ground, you also have to have that it shouldn't be something that's going to make you leave the sukkah because of other considerations. For example, a bad smell or that leaves are always dropping off of it into your food. Going back to, let's go a little further because the next few weeks I'm not going to be here and therefore Shabbos we're not going to be able to have a shiur or so. Omer of Gidol Omer Rab, Hai Apkusa de Dikwa. You have the place where the palm tree comes out. Rashi and Tosfos both explain that you have like this. And you have there's the base of the palm tree. Around it, there grow around the base of the palm tree. There grow these little prickly things out of it. You look at a palm tree. Sometimes you see it has like that. You have these little prickly things that grow all around the base of it. So suppose now you cut off the base of the palm tree and it has these prickly things sticking out of it. So now are you allowed to use that for schach? So he says, yes, misachin bahu. You're allowed to use that for schach. Afa gabda agigi. Now, even though they're attached together, and we said in the Mishnah that you can't use a bundle for schach because of gzeiras oitzer, doesn't matter. Eged bidei shemayim, lo shemay eged. When they're bound together, bidei shemayim, when they come naturally from the tree that way, that's not considered a bundle. And afagab the hoder ogid lahu, and even if then he goes and ties the other ends back together, so you have the end which is attached together at the bottom, then they spread out towards the top. So now let's say you take and you bind that top part together in order to have it all stick together as one piece. Nevertheless, that's still not a problem. Igad b'chad lo shmei igad lo shmei egad. Nevertheless, a single place where you bundled it. Or a single thing, rather, that's bundled together is not considered a bundle. The definition of a bundle is you have a bunch of things that are then bound together. Here, they're all one thing because they're all attached together at one end. Therefore, binding it together at the other end is not considered a binding. The Rambam has a slightly different definition. He explains that the apocursa de dikla over here refers to the top of the palm tree, where you have the branches branch out over there. Same idea. In other words, if you take that part where the branches branch out and they're all attached together at the bottom, then it's fine even if you tie the other ends of the branches together for the same reason. Similar, the Omer of Vinabar Shila, Hai Dukri Jakani. Similarly, these sharp reeds. So it's the same kind of thing as with the deco. Rashi explained, except you have the same thing with certain kinds of reeds grow like that, where you have one branch, where you have one trunk grows on the bottom, and then a whole bunch of individual reeds grow out of it. Same idea. The sach and behu, you're allowed to use them for sach. Afagab da'agidi, because even though they're bound together at one, afagab da'agidi ninu, even though they're bound together at one end, eged bidei shemayim lo shmei eged, it's still, they're bound mina shemayim, and therefore that's not considered a binding. Afagab da'hoder ogid lehu, and even if he ties the loose ends together, eged b'chad lo shmei eged, binding together one thing which is all attached together, is not considered an eged. And tani nami hochi, and we learn similarly in a braisa, konim vidu kronin mesachin behem. You're allowed to use for sach, konim and dukronim. Now that suggests that it means two different things. Konim would be reeds. Dukronim would be digging tools. Now, not ones that have iron blades, obviously. Those would be possible. But we're talking about, let's say, a stick, a plain stick that a person uses for digging. So they want to ask, in that case, konim pshita. Obviously, you can use reeds for sach. What's the chiddush? Ema, what it means is konim shel dukronim, the sach and ben. It means the kind of reeds that we just talked about, where they grow, where the bottom of them is one thing, and then they branch out on top into many different branches, and dukronim means that they're pointy. Nevertheless, misach and behen, you're allowed to use them for sach, again, because that's not the zera of a bundle that's mentioned in our Mishnah that you're not allowed to use. So therefore, you would be allowed to use such things, and even if you bound the loose ends together. Okay. So we'll stop here.